I'm Dr. K-Wise Whitehead, here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, I am excited about today's conversation because we have decided to do a deep dive, kind of part three of our deep dive series. We have been talking about the Young Squeegee Enterprisers for 2 days now. We started on Tuesday when Doug Miller gave us a call, and he talked about his encounter with the Squeegee Enterprises on President Lombard. Now, we're not covering it in the same way. That was day one. We just kind of put it on the table because we think it was important to kind of see what was happening around the city. Day two was yesterday. Justina, my award-winning producer, and I went out, and we had an opportunity to meet with some of the enterprisers and get an understanding of why are they out there doing the squeegee work. Exactly what does it mean for the city? How are they being treated from their perspective? We just wanted to give the story from their perspective. So many of you called. So many of you expressed a concern. So many of you have been reaching out that we've decided to go for day three. And let me tell you how we're going to handle it today. It is not the same show at all. Today, we are talking about solutions that have already been implemented to help the Squeegee Enterprisers. The Baltimore City Police Department, as of January 1st, do note today we're only, 9 days into the year? The BPD has received over 66 filed complaints about the squeegee workers. Something is going on in this city. This is not a new issue. You and I both understand there's nothing new about this work in the city, but it is heating up. It is going to be a major election issue because people are so concerned about this issue. Not one candidate, from the mayor on down to whoever's joined the election lately, is going to be able to get in office unless they have a comprehensive plan for what we're going to do about this issue that is potentially separating our city. We have two people scheduled to join me in the next couple of minutes. One is Kim Trueheart, who is a longtime activist here in Baltimore City. Kim Trueheart has been working with former squeegee workers, getting them off the streets, getting them trained, and she is upset that Baltimore City is not doing more to put money aside to help support them doing other work. Hey, like someone said on my show, take them off the streets, train them in how to clean up, train them in how to do water work, train them in how to, you know, pump gas, do something where squeegee is not the option. The other person that's joining us is Taurus Barksdale. Taurus is launching like a car wash on Saturday where the work is going to be done by squeegee workers. They're going to benefit from the funding. But we have both of them standing by. We had a slew of calls yesterday. We couldn't even get to everybody. So we had to go to a day three. Folks, we don't typically on this show, as you know, we don't typically cover a topic for 3 days out. That's a lot on one topic. But this issue here is so volatile. This issue has become such a moment that is either going to bring the city together or tear it apart. Because it's gotten just that bad. As people are sharing their stories on my Facebook page, I'm going to share some of those. Because we have people who've had very positive encounters, and then we've had people who've had very negative encounters. The thing I think is interesting, folks, is that what's happening with the workers ties in with a couple other things in this city. Let me tell you. It ties in, one, to the 73-year-old that was just recently shot. Because we're dealing with the situation where there are factors working in this city that seem to have no solution. What are we doing with our squeegee workers? What do we do when it comes to protecting our children and the elderly? It doesn't make sense for a 73-year-old woman to be shot in the stomach simply going out on her way to the hospital. And then third, in this whole realm of about protecting our city, making it a stronger and better city, protecting our children in this city, protecting our squeegee workers who believe the only way they can make money is by doing squeegee work. I'm talking about the video that came out of the person who's responsible for killing, shooting and killing community activist Sean Davis. Folks, I saw the video, and the video shows a car pulling up. And this car is not in the turning lane. It's in the far outside lane. The killer jumps out of the car, leaves the door open, and begins running down the street with some type of weapon, shooting at Mr. Davis. Now, there were other cars around. There was another car that the car was running beside. There was a truck right across the street. But nobody has come forward. Nobody. Even though he was running on the street in daylight, shooting a gun, nobody has come forward. Destiny Harrison shot in her own shop, a shop full of people, all of whom scattered when the shooter or shooters came in the door, and nobody has come forward. A 73-year-old was shot outside. Nobody has come forward. We can't seem to deal with the crime issue, and we can't deal with this other big pressing issue. How do we want to deal with the squeegee workers? We want to criminalize them. We want to lock them up. Folks, they're making, according to them, $150 to $300 a day. $300 is on the high end. They make that Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're saying they're making money. And this is what they told me. Again, this study is not generalizable. This is not a large-scale data study. This really was just me just going out. But if they're making $100 in 2 hours, if they're making $200 in 3-4 hours, folks, there's no other solution but to find a way to put money in their pocket to buy whatever they need. What they told me, food, clothes. I give it to my mom to pay rent. I take care of my sister. We get meds. And then, of course, I got to buy weed. A couple of them said that. Well, I have my two guests, and I want to kind of talk this through because we're solution-oriented today. I have Kim Trueheart on the phone. Kim, how are you?
I am well, Dr. K. Happy New Year to you and your audience.
Yes, I'm so happy to have you back. And Taurus Barksdale, how are you?
How you doing? I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I welcome Kim Trueheart back, and I welcome you to the show, Taurus Barksdale. So, folks, we're going to jump right into the conversation because I know people are already calling. I want to get to your calls, but I want to speak with Kim and Taurus first. Kim, you have been on this show before, and you've talked about working to set up programs where we take these young squeegee enterprisers, we train them so they can do other work that's not as dangerous, that doesn't come in, you know, in contact with the public in the same kind of way, that's not so stigmatized, but they're able to make money. Can you talk first about your long-term work in trying to bring another situation into this issue?
Absolutely. October the 28th, I began a 5-week pilot program that I call the Be More Clean and Green Team Pilot. For 5 weeks, I took 10 young former squeegee workers off the corner. And I did that through a process where 14 young men came to me. I interviewed them, talked to them, and selected 10. I paid the 10 $476 a week for 5 weeks. To learn how to mow, cut, clean city-owned property. I purchased over $3,000 worth of lawn care equipment, lawn mowers, weed whackers, backpack blowers, hedge trimmers, rakes, shovels, the works. Additionally, I outfitted each of the 10 young men with steel-toed boots, hoodies, sweatshirts, pants, Dickie pants. We had donation of underwear, long johns. I purchased hats and gloves, as well as goggles, safety goggles, for each of the young men. I additionally brought in an OSHA workplace safety trainer certified to instruct each of the young men in the OSHA workplace safety 10 program,
mm-hmm.
which is 10 hours of workplace safety training.
Okay.
The young men receive their certifications, which they now can put on their resume. Beyond that, I brought in a certified CPR, first aid, and AED defibrillator trainer, certified to teach these young men. Each of the young men were given that test, and they passed. So now these young men have two certifications.
Right.
Right, that they can add to their resume. We ended the program the week of December the 15th. But since December 15th, we've been writing resumes.
Okay.
We've been submitting applications. The young men have been called for interviews. Right? There is a host of job providers, employers, who are interested in these young men who've gone through this 5 week training program. Now, beyond typical training program, I was feeding these young men breakfast every morning,
okay.
Dr. King.
So it was actually a full thing what you were doing here, Kim, where you were doing, I mean, when you start talking about feeding them breakfast, talking them through, making sure they have boots. This is a full-scale lean-in by you.
That's
to
right.
set them up
this
for a different
a
life.
Love program.
Right, this is the love program here.
That's right. So this love program was comprised of this 62-year-old grandmotherly type, loving on them,
right?
Showing them somebody cared enough about them, right? Was interested enough in to ensure they could do these kinds of things safely with the right equipment, right? So, you know, the total cost of the program for the 5 weeks, it really ended up being 6 weeks, was $30,000+, okay?
So
now that I have all
$37,000 training 5 to 6 young people, making sure they get breakfast, they get the steel-toe boots, and they have multiple trainings that they've gone through and licenses now or clearances to do things, about $37,000. But you're now turning them away from where they feel that their only choice, because this is what the Squeegee Enterprises told me when went out there yesterday. They said, my choice is between one or two things, Kim, and this might sound like something they would have said. It's either between doing squeegee work or selling drugs, squeegeeing
right.
or doing rob and squeegeeing,
that's
stealing your car. They're like, you know, squeegee work is the thing that will keep me out of jail.
That's right. And so, you know, my intent now is to find them permanent full-time work.
Nice.
And we're well down that path right now. They're getting interviews. They're getting called to interviews, right? They've got, one of them has a job offer right now in hand, right? Two others are in line to get job offers before the end of this week is up, right? So these 10 young men are now on a path to full employment, right? I am ready to take the next 10 young men off the corner and do the same. Show them somebody cares. Love them, right? And sometimes it's tough love, right? You know, Grandma wasn't always nice, you know? Grandma had to set us straight every now and then, and that's what I do.
Right.
Some of these young men have to have hard conversations, but I'm not giving up on them. The ones who finished as the first cohort are still my young men. I told them, I want you to be kings. I need you to take care of me in my old age.
I like that.
Right? So they are standing ready. Now, mind you, yesterday, for some of the you who followed the news.
Oh, now, you know what, Kim? I want to hold you there because I want that's going to be a big topic here to talk about what happened at the Board of Estimates meeting. So I'm going to have you hold that for just 1 second. Let me pull Taurus Barksdale into the conversation because, Taurus, I saw online that this weekend you're going to be opening a squeegee wash. Can you talk a little bit about that and the planning for it? Who's going to be involved with this? But just give us some insight into this.
Yes. First, I would just like to say thank you to Ms. Treehart, you know, for all of the hard work she's been doing with our youth. But going into the squeegee wash, I'm going to open up a new, you know, car wash. It's a mobile car wash. We can take it. I plan to, you know, take it to the different squeegee locations. But we're going to start first on Orleans and Gay Street because I have a real connection with those guys over there. They call themselves the G300 Squeegee Boys. That's what they call themselves. Mm-hmm. They have full uniforms. They're very official. And so far that I've known, there's never been any, you know, complaints or issues that, you know, have come from those guys. So I will be opening up, you know, a car wash. This is going to be called the Squeegee Wash, and it will be just, you know, for the squeegee workers. And we'll be doing that this Saturday, the grand opening.
Okay, I want to talk through this. So the G300 Squeegee Boys, they have their uniforms. They're over on Orleans and Gay Street. And so this weekend on Saturday from 9 to 4, I can bring my car over here. They'll wash the cars for $20. You said inside and out is $25. As a way to do what? Like, is this going to be an ongoing thing? Is it a way for them to jumpstart doing a car wash? Or is it just to give us a chance to get to know them in a different way?
Well, right now, this probably is going to be like a pilot type of thing. We're going to see what type of response we get. I know it's going to get a great response. So either we do it, we could probably, you know, do it throughout the week, or we could do it, you know, on the weekends. Right now, I've been working with these young men all summer. I'm the guy that started the Hire a Squeegee Boy Challenge, where I started challenging, you know, other local businesses to start giving these guys different opportunities, giving these young men chances. So I've been just trying to develop them into business owners. I challenged all of, you know, the youth at Squeegee. You know, what is your plans to elevate out of this? I want to see you guys, you know, open up your own business. So not only, you know, with this car wash, it's a way to, you know, help them, you know, develop as business owners so that one day they can become their own business, you know, open up their own business. That's what they want to do. They want to, you know, become business owners. So, you know, this is just like a developmental process. One day, you know, I could probably, it's a vehicle also, it's a mobile car wash. So I'm trying to develop them to, you know, get their license. Because, I mean, I'm busy. I don't have time, you know, tomorrow to the, you know, the mobile car wash all day. I would gladly, you know, let those young men do it. But, you know, it's all about development. So it's almost like a developmental stage right now. So, yeah, it will probably be for the weekend right now. But, you know, I eventually, you know, want to give the whole business to them.
Well, now, before I go back to Kim to talk about what happened at the Board of Estimates meeting, so when you did the Hire a Squeegee Boy Challenge, I just wanted to let people know. So, folks, the squeegee issue, the squeegee controversy, the squeegee situation actually comes up every couple of years. I mean, it's been around, and it was really hot back in 1985 when they were talking about what do we do with the squeegee boys. They were trying to figure out, and they're using the term squeegee boys, and I'm using Ron Cassie's article about the squeegee boys from the Baltimore Magazine. But like he argues that the battle lines were drawn in the 80s, where the squeegee controversy, every couple years, it gets set off, typically driven, according to Ron and his research, by white commuters who say, somebody kicked my car, someone stole my wallet, you know, someone leaned in, someone, you know, banged my window. And then all of a sudden, it cast all of the people doing this work into a negative light. This latest controversy only comes on the heels of Doug Miller, whose piece came out on Facebook on Tuesday, a long piece where the mayor actually has stated he's going to make some type of announcement about the squeegee boy incident, because Doug Miller, a Caucasian man, and his daughter said they were harassed and traumatized by three squeegee workers, two of whom he would argue were in their 20s. So with the Hire a Squeegee Boy Challenge, Taurus, did that actually work? Were people actually hiring the young squeegee workers to come off the street and come into their business?
Yes. So right now, I know personally two businesses, they have two moving companies that actively continue to hire these guys. So they have about 10 guys that they work with actively, you know, on a daily basis. So, you know, I was just I'm still trying to, you know, challenge other businesses to reach out, you know, to the squeegee workers, because honestly, the city is not doing enough to help these young men out there, not giving them enough opportunities. I've been inside the city hall. You know, they started a squeegee alternative program, which is a complete joke. I've been down to city hall and sat in those meetings to try to get funding for my nonprofit organization to, you know, so I can continue to, you know, hire these guys besides my business, just on the nonprofit type of thing. And, you know, that I had one meeting and, you know, I haven't gotten a call back or email to come back. So I also have a nonprofit, which is the Baltimore Beautification Project, where we conduct, you know, cleanups all over Baltimore City, very large scale cleanups of illegally dumped items. So we hire, you know, young squeegee workers right off the street, and we're paying them, you know, directly out of our pockets.
Right.
So we brought our, you know, our program to the city trying to get funding. And, you know, we it's just like, it's no help. There's nothing coming from the city. So that's why I challenge the business owners and the community
right.
to, you know, reach out to these guys. Because with the current leadership in the city, it's like the squeegee workers are not important. Fixing that issue is not priority to them. So that's why, you know, I continue to challenge, you know, different businesses in the city to reach out to these young men.
Now, let me ask you, Kim, I want to pull you back into the conversation because I know you remember this. You have a, you know, long history here in Baltimore City. Back in 2017, when we were getting all these complaints about the squeegee workers, former Mayor Catherine Pugh launched the Squeegee Core Initiative. She said that way we can get about 100 squeegee kids off the street. We can, you know, put together car washes, help them get funding. But nothing was ever put in place. So when we come back from the break, Kim, I want to talk about what you think the city overall could do and then what happened at the Board of Estimates meeting last night. Folks, this is Today with Dr. K. If you're just joining us, you got to stay with us to hear how Kim Trueheart is shutting things down so this city can focus on real solutions for the squeegee workers in Baltimore City. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. When we come back, I'll take your calls as well. Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Today is the wrap-up to the discussion we've been having all week around the squeegee workers in Baltimore City and what can be done. Kim, before I went to break, I was talking about how the mayor, former Mayor Catherine Pugh, had this whole idea around the Squeegee Core Initiative, which never got off the ground. What do you think the city could do for a real solution? And then what happened at the Board of Estimates meeting yesterday?
The real solution is to put money on the table to actually pay people who need jobs to get to work. And so how does the city do that? I'm not talking discretionary money. I'm talking existing money. There is money allocated in the city budget to do things like mowing, cutting, alley cleaning. So we're not talking new money. We're just talking how is that currently allocated money spent? And if you spend it on businesses from out of town who don't hire locals, then you will continue to have this problem. And the city exacerbates the problem because it does not focus how money is being spent. So my mission yesterday and every time I go to the Board of Estimates is to get people who make the decision to decide that the money that is already being spent and the Board of Estimates agenda comes out every Monday and that on Wednesday, citizens can go in and say, well, I don't like how you're spending this money, right? Sometimes it has an impact
right.
and other times it doesn't. And thank God yesterday they listened to my oral protest where I said a $40,000 contract to remove invasive plants, Dr. K, invasive plants, remember that term,
right.
at Druid Hill Reservoir and Ashburton Reservoir needed to go to a company from Pikesville. Not a Baltimore City company. And we later found out that the company from Pikesville doesn't hire young black men.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So So I'm saying, but that's a $40,000 contract. That if I got that $40,000 contract with my former squeegee workers, I could extend the period of time that they're not on the corner because I'd give them jobs, right? And to do the things that I trained them to do the things that they are now equipped and ready to do. And so when is the city going to start thinking along those lines to direct contracts? This contract, Dr. K, like I said, is to remove invasive plants.
Right.
You and I, better known as weed pulling, right?
Yeah.
Removing weeds, right? We're talking weeds here.
Right, weeds. Call them invasive plants. An invasive plant is a weed in my house, right?
That's right. Exactly. And I said yesterday at the board, I said, my mother had me pulling weeds at the age of 5 and 6 in her garden, right? This is not rocket science, okay? I can show these boys what's a weed and what's not a weed, right? If I got to take yellow ribbons and put it on the stuff that's the weeds, right, because they might not know. I give you that. They might not know what the weeds are. But if you don't trust that I can identify what the weed is, I got some folks at the University of Maryland
that can tell you what a weed is. Yes.
Right. they can come help us identify what the weeds are, mm-hmm. right? Now, these boys, 6 feet tall in some instances, you know, 180, 200, they can pull weed.
They can.
I have no doubt in my mind they can pull weed, right? But yet, at the Board of Estimates yesterday, the Department of Public Works representative and the Bureau of Purchasing representative sat there and said, well, this is complex work. This may be too complex for these young boys.
Mm.
And
to pull weeds.
Yeah, pulling weeds. You know, it sort of reminds me of the argument that, was the basketball player, Allen Iverson. He said, we're talking practice.
Oh, yeah.
it's sort of like pulling weeds is too complex for young black men to do. 18-year-olds
that's
to 24-year-olds.
That's actually offensive. If I'm not mistaken, I believe you stated this same sentiment when you said you were somewhat offended by the notion that African-American men cannot be taught how. Let's understand that I don't think it's a higher level skill.
That's
to
right.
pull weeds out. Exactly. You give me a picture, you point them out, but the deal is I am working. And so,
that's
therefore,
right.
This is an option for me, and I don't have to squeegee. I don't have to go into illegal activity because I am trained to do a job, and I can do this job here.
That's right. But yet, your preference, Baltimore City government, is to give the contract to an out-of-the-city contractor to bring workers into the city to pull the weeds. You know?
Wow.
And I'm saying, y'all got to be kidding me. No, I'm not going to tolerate this. I'm not going to stand silently by and let this happen. And then after the Board of Estimates, I get a call from one of our elected officials who tells me they pulled all the contracts that this one company had gotten over the last year or so, and it totaled $16 million.
Stop there. Okay, so I just want to be very clear. This company, that's not a Baltimore City company, that does not hire young black men who believe the work that they're doing of pulling invasive plants is just such higher level skills that our brothers can't be trained in how to do it. They have received contracts over the last couple of years totaling $16 million.
Yes, ma'am. Hmm. Yes, ma'am. And that is from the mouth of an elected official in City Hall.
So what we're looking at here is that just like what we thought, Kim, the money gets rolled over to the same companies, the same people who keep getting rich, rather than allowing people here in Baltimore City to have opportunities to pull themselves up out of poverty and to be able to sustain and provide for their families.
Exactly.
That is disturbing.
So we have a responsibility as citizens to eliminate that practice, to insist that our government hire locally.
But let me, Taurus, let me pull you back into the conversation, because one of the interesting things when they talk about the squeegee workers, for a number of people, and I'm back in this Ron Cassie interview, for a number of people, they see the squeegee workers as kind of a Baltimore social problem. Panhandlers, sex workers, homeless people, you know, you have the dirt bike riding 12 o'clock boys and the squeegee workers, and all of them should be arrested and removed from the street. What type of message do you think that sends to not just all the people that I name, but specifically to the squeegee workers, many of whom are like 12 and 13 and 15 and 16 years old?
I think it just sends a message that we really don't care about you. We just, the only solution we have for you is to remove you from the corner or arrest you. You know, they're not giving no other possible solutions. They're not offering these young men job training, ways that, you know, build your resume. It's no solutions at all. The only solution that they have is lock them up. That's the only solution that they have. So that just shows, you know, the lack of leadership that we currently have in our political structure. So, you know, it's up to the citizens. The citizens, we have the power. If we see directly, you know, the people we have in position to do something about it, you know, we're the ones, you know, when the election comes, we're the ones, you know, that's voting. So if we don't like what we see, you know, when it comes to that time of the year, you know, we need to show it. So it's all about, you know, the people that we have in position. And right now, the current structure that we have, that's not priority to them. You know, they have zero solutions. They have not offered no solutions. And as Ms. Trueheart has stated, the contracts consistently, you know, go to, you know, out-of-towners, you know, companies that's not from Baltimore. So it's not doing Baltimore any good. We're missing out on the money. The people that need the money are not getting the money. So...
All right, no, folks. I'm gonna open up some calls here, Kim and Taurus, because what we're talking about, folks, this is kind of the final day three, when we've been talking about the squeegee workers, where it's back in the news again. 66 complaints have gone to BPD, and now the mayor is saying he's going to make a statement. And I have a feeling, Kim, that statement is going to come down. Perhaps I could be wrong. I have a feeling it's going to come down against the squeegee workers, because all of these complaints are by people who are saying, I'm not going to come back into this city, because the city's not safe, the city doesn't protect its residents. I mean, just the outcry and the alarm and the way that this is being framed, it's almost as if there's this attack going on right now from the squeegee workers to anybody who's driving.
Well, you know, every squeegee worker is an individual, human being. Some of them have good intentions. Some may have bad intentions. So to paint them all with the same brush, that they're all criminals, they all needed to be treated as criminals, is wrong. We don't do that generally when we assess people's worth. And so for us to do that in this case is absolutely wrong. Some of the young men I've encountered are gems. They just need help. They need some guidance. They need somebody to care about them and give them an uplift in their lives.
And let them pull the weeds. Let me get some of these calls in here. 410-319-8888. Claude's on the phone from Northeast Baltimore. Claude, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. K? Listen, I was a police officer in Baltimore City and housing for years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And these people out here on these corners are causing trouble. They are busting people's windows. Now, I'm not saying everybody, so let's not, you know what I mean?
Right.
But the ones that are doing it, you lock them up. It's just that simple. And the ones that ain't doing it, you try to help. I mean, there should be. Now, a good police officer always tries to avoid an arrest, no matter what it is. So to be a good police officer, you must know how to work with the community. And the mayor, you get the same speech for years from everybody. You know, they're going to do this, they're going to do that, and they don't do anything. And now, I go out, and I like to get on your show. What I do, I go out and minister and feed our homeless on Sunday. WBAL did a story on me, and I wanted to thank my sponsor, and I'm trying to get WBAL to do a follow-up as I go out with the soup and the coffee and minister to the people. And I see it out here, but not everybody, squeegee people bother you, because I've been in my car, and a couple of them come up to me, and if I got some change, I give it to them. But I mean, there is some that are giving people problems, stealing and whatnot, but you can't say everybody's bad. I mean, even in the housing projects of Baltimore City, you know, I used to get it all the time. All these people are bad in here. Well, you know, there was a lot of damn good people that lived in there.
I absolutely agree with you.
Situation. And, you know, it's sad that we got to go through this with people. But, you know, I don't know, you know, what can be done about this. But locking them up is not really the answer because the juvenile system, they're not going to do nothing with them anyway.
All right. I appreciate you, Claude. Thank you so much. Kim Trueheart. Someone actually said on my show, someone called my show back when we first shared the story of Doug Miller. Someone said, look, we just need to criminalize this. It's aggressive panhandling, and let's just lock them up. That the idea that people think that the best solution is to put young black males in jail in a city where a third of all the prisoners in Maryland are black men from Baltimore City.
Well, Dr. K, I'm proud to say I don't enter into those conversations because my work is all about uplifting those who want to help,
yes,
to be helped, and to offering whatever creative solutions I can personally come up with that are inspired by God. And, you know, the foolish conversations are for somebody else to have. I don't say that this is a violence prevention program. This is an employment program, right? Our problem in this city, first and foremost, is the highest unemployment in the state of Maryland.
Yes, it is.
Right? But nobody's talking about that.
And how that directly connects to all of this.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. We have the answers, right? We have to be creative in the solutions. And right now, I'm trying to do my best. Brother Barksdale is doing his best. And what we see is a lack of governmental leadership to support these kinds of projects and ideas. Yesterday was a seminal moment where the government agreed with a citizen for once and said, well, maybe we should rethink this contract.
To not giving the contract to a company that's already made $16 million.
Yeah.
In doing work for this city. Let me go back to some other calls, and I'll come back to you, Taurus. I have Corey on the phone from Northwest Baltimore. Corey, how are you?
Hey, Dr. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. You too.
I'm calling. You know, I have yet to encounter a situation with the police yet. However, I work in the daytime, and I'm normally out running errands for my job. However, I see these squeezy kids. You all say get them a job. How about let's get them back in school? A lot of them belong in school during the hours of 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. They don't belong on the corner of Tweedian at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's just not, you know, school's open. So why are they not in school? Yes, after school, they need the job. But let's get them in school in the daytime.
Okay, I appreciate you, Corey. So, Kim, I'll come back to you because that was also a big issue that came up. So when we went out there yesterday, the school was closed. We understand that. Doug Miller, when he had his encounter on Tuesday, he said it was at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon. The program that you do, are you putting them, moving them towards going back to school and then working after school? Are you working with older squeegee workers? Like, where does your program fall?
My focus was on 18 to 24-year-old.
Okay.
Right? And true, of the 10 young men that I selected, four of them were dropouts.
Mm.
My focus on those four has been to encourage them to get back into the academic world to get their GED. And we have tutors and coaches on standby to help them with that. So this is, you know, a focused program, but there are other people inside the government who say they will focus on the younger squeegee worker. And that's fine, but mine is at the moment getting some attention, but my focus is the older ones.
Okay, then let me ask you, Taurus, what do you think of what the caller said? Because his concern is if they are under the age of 18, if they're still in K-12 environment, then they shouldn't be out there, job or not. They should be in school, and then we deal with employment after school. How do we kind of close that gap? Because a lot of them are out there doing the work during school hours.
Well, it starts with, you know, just the leadership of, you know, the squeegee youth. The guys on Orleans and Gay Street, they don't allow no kids to be out there during school hours because they know that it bring, you know, bad attention from the police officers. So they don't allow it at all. So I think just getting to, you know, these young men, mentoring them, you know, just offering them different services. We have to engage them, you know, as leaders. We have to engage them to get them back in schools because once they, you know, drop out of school, you know, become over, what, age 18, it's really, really hard to get anyone to get, you know, to get into a GED program. Because once you drop out of school, you know, you get different, your life changes. You take on different responsibilities. You're more inclined to just be worried about, you know, getting money. It's already hard for you, so you're just trying to get money. So the aspect of getting back to school makes it even more harder for those young men. So I think, you know, we just have to start early. Like some of these guys, it's probably, you know, it's probably going to be harder to help them. So my solution is, you know, starting with the young kids that just want to try this for the first time, try to, you know, sway them away from, you know, even trying it. Just stay in school, worry about staying in school. But at the same time, it's poverty. These kids are living in poverty. They're trying to get money. That's why, you know, you have kids that are 12, 13 years old, you know, squeegee. And when I was 12 and 13, I was outside playing football or something. But now the times have changed.
Right.
It's really, really hard for individuals. They're worried about, you know, the money aspect. So I guess we just have to figure, like, the world is steadily changing. We have to adapt to, you know, the situations that we are in now. We have kids out here that want money. So I don't know if we have to, you know, start new programs. Maybe you read a book, we'll pay you. Like, we have to think different, come up with different ideas to, you know, help these children get money or just even probably just feed them.
Okay.
We have to come up with different ideas and different solutions. But right now in the current, you know, structure, the current leaders that we have, it's not of their priority to solve this issue.
Right, right. We got that. We definitely have that. Folks, I want to make a note that the graduation rate in Baltimore City has gone up. So I want to say that I hear you folks calling about, well, they need to be in school. Do make a note that in 2017, the graduation rate here in Baltimore City was 70.67%. It went up in 2018. In 2018, the graduation rate was 72.18%. And I want to know that the biggest increases we've seen are among Black students and Hispanic students. And on top of that, Baltimore City rose and the rest of the counties dropped in terms of graduation rates. We actually went up. So we're doing something to plug the hole. We may not be filling all the holes, folks, but we are filling some of the holes. We have Johnny on the phone. Johnny's a new caller from Baltimore. Johnny, how are you? Welcome to the family.
I'm well, Dr. K. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to say a quick commendation or shout out to Ms. Trueheart and Mr. Barksdale for just the work that they're doing, like just real grassroots on the ground solutions to the challenges that we face. And I wanted to also not to kind of bring back the fact of one of the solutions that we can do to help, you know, the squeegee guys is to get involved in the process, just like Ms. Trueheart did at the Board of Estimates. Like,
right.
Follow the money. It is a lot of money going into Baltimore City, and none of it is hitting the ground, so to speak, and getting to the people that really need it. And I'm even talking about programs and resources and this, that, and the third that are supposedly helping the community that are not. And so, like, we should get involved in the process and know what's happening in our school system and how that money is being spent and how the city is spending this money and so on and so forth. So, yeah, thank you for that.
Oh, I appreciate it. Let me take a couple more calls and I'll come back to our guests. We have Colin on the phone from Baltimore. Colin, how are you?
I'm well, Dr. K. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
So basically, Mr. Barksdale and Ms. Trueheart are two examples of quite a few examples, actually, of us people, citizens getting out and doing the legwork because they have their ear to the ground. The city is continuing to show us that they do not care. your money speaks volumes, well, where you spend your money, that is. So
right.
If you're not spending your money with us and our community, what more can they tell us about their stance of them not caring about us? This particular contractor has been getting $16 million worth of contracts. But where could that $16 million have gone in our community?
Yep.
It's not that they don't know, Dr. K. They do not care.
Mm.
They don't care. I mean, it doesn't matter whose face or what color the face is of Baltimore City or who's running the city. They don't care. Our black representatives don't care. They talk a good game to get in the office and get that seat. But once they get in there, things change. And so what is it that we really can do other than what the likes of Ms. Trueheart and Mr. Barksdale are doing and others are doing? I mean, what more can we do? I mean, how far is that going to go? It's going to take us a longer time,
right.
But the city doesn't care because the city knows these things. The city knows what problems we have in our communities. They know this, and they refuse to put any monies into it. So they remove the resources, and they let the city die. Once you take away resources, it dies. It begins to have to fend for itself. So when these, not just the squeegee kids, but these violent acts start to occur more and more and more, and they start to reach other counties and such, these are the reasons or some of the reasons why or what causes them to do that. You're not feeding us as a city. You're not feeding us.
Right.
So
right.
Resources are not there, so they have to do what they have to do. And these kids are showing that they are resourceful and going out and making their own ends meet as best they can, and yet the city still chooses to negate that and try to keep them down.
Thank you so much, Colin.
Locking them up.
I appreciate you. Kim, I want to circle back around to you because you said something I want to drill down in for a couple of seconds here. When you talked about Baltimore City's high unemployment rate, that if you couple that with the fact that we have a large percentage of black folks in this city living below the poverty level, and you add in how your life expectancy is uniquely tied to your zip code in this city, it feels like this is a multifaceted problem. That even though we're focusing on the squeegee workers, it is much more complex and perhaps more difficult to solve than that.
Nobody said this work was easy, okay? Mm-hmm. And yes, it is a complex series of problems that need a comprehensive solution. We look at poverty. We look at poor educational outcomes. We look at broken families. We look at lead poisoning. We look at all of these problems that exist in Baltimore City, but yet we talk about comprehensive solutions, but we don't engage in them. You know, one of the things in the program that I have, the numbers show, is that of 10 young men, 4 of them are dropouts.
Mm-hmm.
Of 10 young men, 5 of them have criminal records, right? Of 10 young men, 5 of them have babies under 2 years old that they're trying to care for, right? So the statistics are clear. You know, this is one incident of 10 young men who demonstrate clearly the problems of Baltimore City, right? I know that in order to be effective in engaging with these young men, I've got to address all their problems.
Right.
From, did you have anything to eat this morning, right? Do you have a warm coat? When the weather got bad, 2 of the young men called me up, Miss Kim, I can't come because it's cold. I can't stand on the corner. I don't have a coat, right? You know, my baby mama is calling me, and they need Pampers and milk. I don't have bus transportation money today. I can't get to work. So all of those issues fall on the program to help ameliorate somehow, right? And did I know that in the beginning? Absolutely, I knew that. I'm not naive. I know
right.
what these young men are having challenges with. And did I have money in the grant to cover all of those expenses? No, right? But I found resources outside to help, to get bus passes,
right,
to make sure that if they couldn't get to work, how I'm going to get them to work, right? If they needed a coat. I had a brother actually show up one morning with a coat, a down jacket, right, to give to one of my workers who didn't have a coat.
Now, folks, if you're just joining us, well, I want to just step in. If you're just joining us, it's Today with Dr. K. We're going to be taking a break in just a second. This is kind of part three. We wanted to wrap up our conversation with Sweegee Enterprises because we've been talking a lot about the problem. I wanted to bring people on who were actually doing solutions. One is Kim Trueheart, who has been running a program where she takes Sweegee workers over the age of 18, trains them, helps them to get moving them along the path towards full employment. And then Taurus Barksdale, who's doing a Sweegee car wash on Saturday, this Saturday, at Orleans and Gay Street, where he is working with the G300 Sweegee boys, where they're going to do something other than just try to wash your windows, but do a full car wash. And it's kind of a pop up action to potentially lead to more. Now, we're going to leave it here. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by a young doctor of public health who's worked very closely with Lawrence Brown to talk about the mental health and trauma here in Baltimore City. Kim, thank you so much for joining us, as always.
You're welcome, Dr. K.
I appreciate you. Taurus Barksdale, thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to seeing you on Saturday. I hope to make it out to the car wash.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, we're going to leave you for just a moment. When we come back, let's keep talking about health and trauma in Baltimore City. Let's open it up in a different direction when we return.
And a good afternoon. Looking just fine on the Penn Line of the MARC system. No major delays to worry about on the northbound side. Brief delay on southbound train 439 heading into the Washington area. The light rail link on schedule and the Metro subway link also running on time. Local link bus diversions include 34 southbound diverting at Forest Park and Granada, 34 northbound, 79 eastbound diverting at Forest Park and Brundage, 79 westbound diverts at Wakefield and Fairview. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.